Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for High Velocity Radio.
Welcome to the High Velocity Radio Show, where we celebrate top performers producing better results in less time. Stone Payton, Lee Cantor here with you this afternoon. How are you, buddy?
I am doing great. I'm excited about the show because this is something that I'm personally interested in, one of these guests, which I won't reveal now. Which one
You are personally interested in exactly what one of these guests does, and then we both have a great deal of affinity for our second guest and the work that they do. So this is going to be a fun segment. A little bit later in the program, we're going to get a chance to visit with a lady with Women Who Code, Alicia Carr. But first up on the High Velocity Radio Show this afternoon, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce Managing Director with Renters Warehouse. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast, Mr. Todd Barton. How are you, man?
Awesome, I guess. How you doing?
Doing great. Renters Warehouse, can you share a little bit about what you guys are doing for folks?
Sure. We started here in Atlanta about 4 years ago, and we are a tenant placement and property management company. We now service about 1,100 properties, doing everything from tenant placement to property management services.
Now, is the company based here in Atlanta, or this is the Atlanta office?
This is the Atlanta office. We've got probably... They will start in Minnesota about 7 years ago, by a gentleman named Brenton Hayden. It's expanded across the country. I personally run the firm here in Atlanta.
And then can you share a little bit about how this works? Like, are you guys managing individual homes that are put for rent, or is it by how does it work?
So the way we started, and we started with zero. Here in Atlanta.
You had none.
We had zero.
We had you here.
We had me. It was me and a phone. But we serviced a market that at first was the unintentional landlord, right? People who, you know, during the downturn of the market, right? There was a lot of real estate was underwater, or people, you know, have life changes in their lives. So they upside down their house, they're moving, divorced, separated, life change, career, downsize, upsize, all those kind of things. But it's really morphed into people are really waking up, right? With 1,100 homes, most all of our clients are individual homeowners, right? Mm-hmm. Not large investment groups. So they're really embracing the idea of the fact that their asset is their home, right? It's one of the few assets that if you wake up and go, you know what, this is my asset. And so they're turning it into an ability to be a real estate investor, get cash flow, get the tax breaks, and really start down the path.
And you guys are doing all the work, right?
We are. We make it, as they say, we make it fast, free, and worry-free. So just like anything, when you start the process, we want people to be, we educate people, right?
Sure.
What is your property worth? What can it rent for, right?
Right.
People have always kind of looked at real estate investing may be kind of far off, right? They go to a conference and people say, hey, you can make millions and millions of dollars.
Right. Like, I have a brother-in-law in Florida, and he has like one property, and he's the landlord. So if something happens, he gets a call and it's his problem. He has to find, when that lease ends or whatever, he has to go and find the next guy to be in there.
Right. So the two key services that we provide are tenant placement and property management. Mm-hmm. So I always kind of talk to people about, hey, you know what? I'll tell you about the property management services in a minute. But
that's a non-issue unless you have a tenant, right?
Well, it's not only that. The real issue is not getting a tenant, right? I tell people tenants are like air. They're everywhere, right?
Are they?
Oh, yeah. Finding and placing a great tenant is the key. Uh-huh. Right.
Oh, so, a great tenant. So you're being discerning.
Well, if you don't have a tenant that pays rent on time, takes care of your property, does it quietly, right? You're setting yourself up for a lot of trouble.
Right. Because some people think, oh, I'll just go to Craigslist and put, house for rent. And then, somebody responded. And then, they signed the check and I'm done. But that could be a nightmare, right?
Nobody makes money off a bad tenant. So yes, that's the other side of the equation. So we spend a lot of time, money, energy, and effort really on the front end. It's crucial. The way that people look for properties, applicants in general, if you're not really able to source, vet, and place tenants correctly, you'll get yourself in trouble and you might have an empty house and an empty asset.
Right. Well, I know I'm going to ask for a real life kind of hypothetical situation, and I'm going to use my home as the hypothetical.
Great.
It's not all that hypothetical, FYI.
Here we go. We love. Okay. We love.
Here we go. I live here in Sandy Springs.
Good.
Is that, are you familiar with this area?
I was born and raised in Dunwoody.
Okay. So you're familiar with this neighborhood. I have a ranch house, and it's right 5 minutes from here. Now, it's on about 0.8 of an acre, and it's three bedroom, two bath house. Is that something that's rentable in this market?
This market is booming. So absolutely it's rentable. So it's not only rentable, it would probably go really fast.
Okay. So it's people are looking to move into this part of town.
Well, you got to think about in general, Atlanta's one of the hottest rental markets there is. People are moving here all the time. Millennials are choosing to rent as opposed to own. We get most of our clients are, again, individual homeowners who have decided to move away.
Right. So now I'm in a perfect spot because my kid's now in college. So now we're empty nesters.
So you kind of switch your focus, right? It's no longer your home. It now becomes an asset. So how do I maximize that asset?
I would call Todd.
You would call Todd.
So what kind of conversation are we going to have?
Well, first of all, we're going to ask you, okay, what are your objectives? What are you trying to do? Let's change the mindset of it's a house. We're going to take the emotion out of it, right?
Right. Out of it. Don't worry. I'm not emotionally connected to my house at all.
The first thing we're going to do is like, okay, what's the property going to rent for? So what we do is we've got dedicated listing and leasing agents, right? Mm-hmm. So we've actually trademarked the word rent estate. Right, it's a different category.
I like it.
Rent a state.
Yeah. Rent a state.
Rent a state. Good one. Sometimes people get it. You know, you're renting a state. Right. Like bingo. But it's rent a state. Right. So we've actually trademarked that because it's a different category. Just like you have real estate agents, we have rent a state advisors. Mm-hmm. So these folks are. We've got about 16 of them now. They're truly professionals. The first thing we do is assign an agent. They would call you up, set up a time to meet you at the property to do really three important things for you. Once again, it's an educational process. So first thing they're going to do is they call you up, meet you. They want, you know, to one, tell you more about both our tenant placement and property management services. Secondly, importantly, right, how do you make your property rent ready?
Right.
So, you know, it's your home. So again, I'm going to have to take the emotion out of this.
It's out.
Okay.
Believe me.
But there are certain things that are going to attract the tenant. And
right.
A good tenant, or again, we're going to go back to exactly. Good tenants. So we'll point it out. So getting it rent ready is a lot easier and less expensive than getting it market ready, because market ready really means, like, if you think about real estate, traditional selling of a property, it's all about a one-time event. Everybody comes together. We've got inspectors. We've got evaluators. We've got, you know, mortgage people, and they all go, boom, it's over.
Right.
Checks get passed. Rent estate is different, right? We are going to have somebody living in this property. It's going to be a service business. So we have to make sure that we take care of the property, take care of the people
right.
in that property. So we need to get it hotel clean is the best example of.
So that means I got to empty the house. The renter buys it or rents it with it as empty, or does it include the furniture? I don't know anything about this.
So my recommendation is you're going to have certain things that you're going to keep. Appliances are one. HVACs are crucial here in Atlanta. But I wouldn't recommend that you actually keep it furnished. There's two reasons for that. Number one would be people go, well, you know, it's furnished. They'll like their furniture. Well,
or they like it or they don't.
Well,
right?
Number one is nobody's really going to take care of yourself the way
you would.
And number two, it's kind of not really, until you think about it, you'll understand, right? If somebody doesn't have any furniture, they probably don't have any income, right?
Right. So that's a good red flag.
So
there's an insider tip right there.
That's a pro tip.
You know, and so we want people who can pay rent, take care of their property, and do it quietly.
And throw some furniture in there.
But there's certain things you want to do. Like you do want to, you know, we want clean carpets. We'd like to get it painted.
I have an alarm system. Is that a good, like that should be included in this? Or they have to go and get their own alarm system?
But the alarm system could be a feature, but you would want them to change it into their name. Mm-hmm. Okay. Things that you don't want, if you're in an HOA situation, right? There's certain things you cannot just
right.
pawn off. But
I'm not in HOA. Okay. Wide open. Free agent.
Free agent. So, but you get the house rent ready. And then the most important thing we're going to do is we're going to prepare and provide what we call a comprehensive market rental analysis. Does this actually make sense? Can you make money doing this?
Right.
So we actually have proprietary software that will basically show you 20, 30, maybe 40 properties within a 1 to 2 square mile radius of your property that are presently now for rent and the asking rental price of the top 10 that are closest to yours, right? So you get a really good idea of what it'll rent for. Mm-hmm. Plus, you've got agents who really know the markets, they know the areas, and they especially know the applicants, right?
Right.
That's the key. And so with that kind of information, they'll be able to help you get down the first step.
And then then you go in there, and then you come up with some number. I think it's acceptable. Then how do we move forward?
And then now we're in high gear, right?
High gear. Right?
So the average, the average time on market is about 17 to 21 days. But what we're going to do is again, we're looking for great tenants, right? That's the key. So we marketed out to over 230 plus rental websites and syndication sites. So
these your own proprietary ones, or you're using kind of what's out there in the world?
We have a software that gets it out into the world. Mm-hmm. So what it does is I say we're going to cast a very wide net in order to capture one very good tenant. So some of the ones you might recognize are like Zillow, Trulia, right. Renters.com, RentBits, HotPads.
So you're in all the kind of mainstream ones.
Absolutely. And also off-stream ones. So the technology gets it out there, but we've got proprietary technology that brings it back to us, right? And we do the important thing in this whole thing, which is we answer the phone, return phone calls, right? Tenants are not buying. They are shopping. So if you don't call them back, you don't even
get a swing at them.
Right. And so, and you don't do some pre-vetting, they're going to be moving on to that next property quickly. If you've ever tried to do it yourself.
So this is kind of an impulse. They buy this as an impulse buy? I mean, a rent?
So the next step is, we're going to set up and confirm appointments with them, right? We're going to show them the
property. So is my house empty at this point?
It doesn't have to be, but it depends on where you are in the process, right? It needs to be hotel clean, and we want to make sure. So we rent them all different stages. If it's empty, that's fine. If it's got furniture and it looks fine, it's clean, presentable, right? Again, you want to make sure you're trying to capture a great tenant, right?
Right.
A tenant walks into a house and it has a bad odor, or it's got a hole in the wall, it's got a water leak, right? I'm not looking to buy a problem or rent a problem. I'm looking to have a nice place, probably live
it's
in a
easy,
nice
right. right?
I want a good school district, right? It's again, people are choosing to do this, right? They might be here for 2 or 3 years. They transfer their job. It's a great opportunity for them to go and, live in a house, live in a great neighborhood, go to a school district. They're doing their homework as well. So if it fits their category and it fits yours, then great. So then, then they start doing the application process, right? And that's the key element of all this. So they have to do an online application. What will come back is 100-point plus background check. It's going to include the person's credit history, their rental payment history, their eviction history, their criminal history, their income, their proof of income, their proof of employment, references. We're going to Google them, we're going to LinkedIn them, we're going to Facebook them, try to match it all up, right? We really want to know, hey, does this all work out?
Right.
We ultimately bundle up all that information and deliver it to you, the owner, for your review as well, right? So ultimately, our owners get to make the final decision whether or not this tenant fits their credit and income criteria. Mm-hmm. So if they're sitting by their jobs a little bit shaky, their income's a little bit off, I can't get a hold of their former landlord, which is a huge red flag, right? If I try to call up,
the last person they live with. And you can't find them.
You
may want to pass on this one.
Well, again, we're really trying to say,
how bad do you want to rent it?
Well, I would say take your time.
Right. Error on the side of caution.
Again, nobody makes money off bad tenants.
Right. And you're in for the long haul.
Yes.
Because you want the relationship to go beyond this one transaction, right? You want to be there multiple renters.
Well, the real way to make money and rent a state, right, is to have and keep great tenants for a period of time, because the turnover costs are enormous, right?
Right.
If I only rent it out for 12 months and then I got to do this whole thing again, I got to pay a tenant placement fee, I've got to repaint the house, I got to get new carpet. So taking care of your tenants is actually really, really important. So mm-hmm. I stress to people, there's going to be costs associated with being a landlord, right? That, there's deferred maintenance, and kind of a rule of thumb on deferred maintenance would be, take whatever amount of rent that is, and anywhere from 8 to 12% of that money should just be set aside for deferred maintenance,
hot water
or leak, right?
Right.
And you want to be really responsive because you want to keep that tenant.
Exactly. If your tenant's paying rent on time and taking care of your money, because if you're not, and they don't think you're going to take care of the house, right? Some things that might not bother you.
Right. It could bother the renter.
It could bother the renter. Exactly. So, you know, you got to keep in mind, again, it's not a sale. It is a relationship. It is a service. And so you're providing that person a service. And if you can keep that person happy and in that service, they're going to re-up, right? And then you don't have to go through this whole process again. And so now all of a sudden the cash starts to go. The house is appreciating. You're making money doing this. And then guess what? You can take some of those proceeds and now go look for an investment property. And that's how you start to build a portfolio. And many of our clients are doing that.
It's time for me to get some consulting because I want to head into that part of the conversation. So you guys have been talking about a home that Lee owns. And knowing Lee, he probably does own it. Knowing Lee, he doesn't have a mortgage on it. But suppose I've got, you know, Lee Cantor or Ryan Redhawk McPherson pockets, and I am looking at investing in a property to do what you're describing. Would you advise this? I mean, is this a good time in history and in the market to seriously consider investing in a property solely for that purpose to turn around and do what you're talking about?
I get at least 8 to 10 calls a day from investors all across the world. I mean, Australia, New Zealand, calling about Atlanta. Atlanta's a great market, right? The rental rates are at historic highs, okay? And also the appreciations are going up at the same time. You've got millennials. So the answer to your question is yes. It's an awesome time to be investing in real estate or rent estate, as we would say.
So now the services that you offer are to find the tenant for me if I'm choosing to be the landlord, but I also can use services that you have for you to be kind of the first line of defense?
Well, it goes back to your brother-in-law, you said?
Yes.
Okay, well, so yes, the answer is yes. So now that I got a great tenant for you, we'll manage that tenant, manage the property, right? This is where the work really starts. This is the relationship part. You know, if you want the phone calls at 2 a.m, you're more than happy to take it.
I don't want them.
He does.
I'm
he just
happy
wants
to pay
money.
Your fee. What is the fee about? It's a percentage of the rent?
Well,
or is it the flat fee?
We have two fees. We break up our fees into tenant placement fees, right? Once I got a great tenant, because we got a lot of investors who will say, well, I've got this part down.
Right.
But it goes back to the great tenants. But most of our clients, we charge a flat fee, okay? Some property management companies will charge you a percentage of the rent. Just depends. And there's very good property management companies throughout Atlanta. We're just one of the largest and fastest growing. So we're excited about that. But so the first thing we do with property management is like, there's a lot of laws. Like people start dipping their toes into this and they don't realize, well, there's landlord-tenant laws. There's things you need to do, things you don't need to do. What's your lease going to do? How do you enforce your lease? What do you need to do about maintenance? So first thing we're going to do is we're going to make sure that we're going to keep you buttoned up, right? So the first thing we do is we do move-in inspections, right? We do photographic video documentation of the move-in. Right. So what we're going to do is we've got many iPads. Technology is really big now. Right. And we're going to go in there and capture the as is condition of your property. We're going to upload that to a private server. Same thing at move out. Right. So if there's any damage to your property other than normal wear and tear, we've got great documentation in order to hold back security deposit or get additional damages if necessary. We also do what we call a lease compliance evaluation. Right. So we've got a third party firm that comes in during the third or fourth month of the tenancy. And there's a reason for that because, you know, we find that if there's going to be a problem, it's going to happen early on and we'd like to know about it. And they're going to take about 30, 40, 50 pages worth of notes and photos of the entire property. And you know what? It goes a couple things. It says, hey, is there a dog that's not supposed to be here, right?
Right.
Are there people living here that are not supposed to be here?
It's after the honeymoon stage is over, right? This is when they're kind of living in it and they're comfortable.
Yes. And, you know, and we want the tenants to be comfortable because there might be something wrong with the deck.
Right.
Right. So, you know, we want to make sure that we get that fixed.
Sure.
The gutters might need to be cleaned because you don't want a tenant climbing on your roof to clean up the gutter. So it does a lot of different things. It really gets a good snapshot of the property. The tenant feels secure in the property. And you know, I would say 95 out of 100, they're perfect. So it works out really well. The other thing we do is the most important thing is we enforce your lease and collect the rent, right? Rent is what kind of makes this whole thing work. So rent's due on for our lease is due on the second and it's late on the second. There's not any exceptions. Our tenants have an ability to pay through a portal. They can pay via ACH transfer, money orders, credit, and debit cards. We don't take personal checks, but the nice part about that is the money comes into us. And then we turn around and we direct deposit it right into your account. usually by the 9th, 10th, or 11th of every month.
So I'm supposed to give you slack on the paying me? You don't give the tenant slack?
I wish I could. Well, I
have to decide that it's due on the 11th and it's late on the 11th, all right?
Well, the challenge is not that. I like to pay you the next day, so I gotta let the ACH just clear. So the last thing I want to do is call you up and send you a check, and you go, hey, I call you back up and say, hey, I need to pull that money back out. You don't like that.
When does your fee come?
Our fee comes when we just take it right out of the rent. So when we pay you, we pay ourselves.
So you're paying us the net of the
exactly
of your fees removed from it.
Right. So then, you know, the other things that we do for our clients is we coordinate and all the maintenance requests, right?
So like say they go, like you said, the hot water heater exploded and there's water everywhere. They're calling you, right?
That'd be an emergency request. Take that.
But that's your call. Do you get that call? And then you say to me, hey, they need a new thing, and then I write the check, and then you manage that, or I got to send a guy, and now that's my problem.
No, we take care of that. So the way we work our maintenance is there's two kind of maintenances, right? First is going to be regular maintenance. So the way we coordinate all maintenance requests. So with 1,100 properties, we get a lot of maintenance requests.
Sure.
It's also an education of a tenant. A lot of tenants will be coming from an apartment where there's on-site maintenance, right?
Right. Where it's like, hey, an hour, right, send the guy.
Right. So that doesn't really occur
in a house.
In a house, right? So the expectation is always trying to set the expectation of what's going to happen. But a request will come in and we'll make sure it's truly a request, right? You know, we'll try to troubleshoot.
Not like a light bulb.
Not like a light bulb. You know, or did you try hitting the switch on the garbage disposal, right? But if it's truly a request, we'll contact the owners, and then they have the ability to, if they have their own vendors they would like us to work with, we're happy to work with them. If not, we got with 1,100 properties, we have incredible vendors that we work with every day. Either way, we start coordinating with the tenant and the vendor to get it fixed in a timely and reasonable manner in accordance to Georgia law. We also provide the emergency request, right, 24 hours. So there's really two major emergencies. So I'll let you guess what they are.
But the AC?
In Atlanta, air conditioning.
And a tree, or water. A tree crashed through my roof.
Tree's a good one. No, really, the AC is right there. We call that a high priority.
In August, it's there.
It's a high priority. It's not an emergency. It's a high priority. But it's really fire, and that's 911, please, and water. So water is really the what hurts the property the most is really a water problem. So. But we'll shoot somebody out there right away, secure the property until the next morning and make sure that, you know, we can now diagnose what's going on.
But you're the first line of defense. I'm writing the check to fix anything. But you're managing the vendor that's the person that's fixing it?
Yes. So you get to make the decisions, and that's what you're supposed to be. You're an investor. I go back to you treat this like an investment. It's no
right.
longer, it's a, you're managing this process. So you're making, I'm bringing you the solutions, or here are the estimates,
right,
and you're going to say, okay, let's move forward with this one.
Good stuff. I mean, this seems like a no brainer.
I can tell your eyes are lighting up the whole time. You're thinking,
I'm saving
pillow
his
money.
Car.
You get a discount.
So where can our listeners go to learn more? What's the best way for them to reach out and have a conversation with you or somebody on your team about this?
The easiest way is to pick up the phone and call us at 404-662-2322. Again, I'll go with 404-662-2322. Or you can just go to our website. Tons of information. There's calculators, rent versus sell calculator there. It's renterswarehouse.com. That's renterswarehouse.com.
And that's / Atlanta for Atlanta, but you guys are in a bunch of states too, right?
Yep, sure can. Sure.
Well, Todd, it's been a lot of fun having you on the show today. I really appreciate it. And I think we may have you a new client here in the making.
Excellent. I look forward to it.
Hey, can you hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
I can't wait to hear them.
All right. Next up on High Velocity Radio, we have with us from Women Who Code, Miss Alicia Carr and Friend. Welcome to the show, Alicia.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. And who'd you bring with you?
This is Erica Stanley. She's also director of Women of Code.
Well, hello, Miss Erica.
Hi, how is everyone?
We're doing well. Delighted to have you. So, Alicia, we'll start with you. Women Who Code, what's this thing all about? What are you out there trying to do for folks?
Well, Women of Code is an organization that helps women who are already in technology, who are trying to get back into technology. For example, a mother who has a computer science degree, took a break and decided she needed to get back into it. And she's now, everything has changed, technology has changed and she wanted to get back into it. So she joins Women of Code and we help her find her place back into technology. Right now, we are at 80,000 members.
And that's worldwide. That's around the world.
It's around the world, international, yes.
Where did it start?
It started in San Francisco in about 2011, and it started as a meetup. And Elena Percival, who is the CEO of Women Who Code, decided that this was bigger than just a meetup group and actually decided to make an organization out of it.
And then this is the Atlanta chapter.
Yes, the Atlanta Network started in about 2013, and we're about 1,600 members now.
Wow. And then 1,600 members, are these all women who are employed or they're looking for work or it's a combination?
We have a combination. So what we really strive to do is help women excel in technical careers. So that could be you're already in tech and you want to see how do you get that next step, maybe into the executive level, or how do you transition? Maybe you're a new developer. So we really seek to make sure that women are excelling in technical careers.
And then, and that could be a woman at any level. It could be entry level. They could be in college and looking for their first job. And it could be an executive, like you mentioned, that maybe stayed at home with their kids for a little bit and now wants to get back in there.
Absolutely.
And it's not necessarily, they may not want a full-time job. It might be project work.
It could be a lot of different things. But
entrepreneurship. It could be project. It could be contract. It could be full-time. We get them of all different.
Whatever their needs are, you're there to serve them.
All right, so school's just starting. So let's take a lady maybe who's re-entering the marketplace and she gets wind of this Women Who Code thing. What is step one? Does she go to some sort of intake meeting or Margarita Mondays, you know, for the local chapter? Or how does it start and what happens in the early going?
So the first step is to just find us on Meetup. And there are many, many networks there. But you can just search by your zip code and find the nearest Women Who Code network and just sign up on Meetup. And that will instantly give you access to any of our meetings that are coming up. And typically our meetings, while we do have All the Nerdy Ladies Monday, we actually do have a lot of tech talks and a lot of workshops. So a lot of highly technical meetups to help you kind of level up your skills and also to meet other women doing the same kinds of things that you're doing.
Now, is your group kind of aggregating all the other groups that are out there, or you have Women Who Code kind of specific groups?
So,
or it's a combination of that.
We do a combination. Yeah. So we have our own groups within Women Who Code. For instance, Alicia is our iOS lead. So she's leading our iOS group. Mm-hmm. But we also work really closely with the other women in tech organizations like Kai Ladies and
Right, because there could be little splinter groups that maybe just have a handful of specialists in one kind of niche. And then you just make the entire group aware that this exists and you put it on the calendar.
We do that all the time. Like, those girls develop it. They actually teach women coding classes. They have three-month coding classes. It's $90. Mm-hmm. So they'll teach them HTML, CSS. We will also suggest to women who are getting into technology to check out, like, Girls Develop It, to even think that if, you know, get a taste of it, if this is what they really want to do. And then if they want to go even further, we recommend, like, General Assembly, Iron Yard, and there's so many other schools that they can actually go into and just start learning how to code.
Now, it says Women Who Code, is it that programming centric or is it people or technology? You know,
it's mostly programming centric. We do want women, again, to excel in technical careers, but we do have a focus on development.
Right. So the focus is on kind of programming and coding and that specific thing, even though some of the people might be interested in, you know, being a blogger. Or is this not appropriate for somebody who's interested in that?
So that's an interesting question because it's more about kind of just understanding tech. Right. And coding helps you kind of understand the language of tech. Mm-hmm. So even though you might be a blogger, you might still want to learn JavaScript.
Right.
Or you might still want to learn PHP. Yeah. And so we have a lot of meetings where we're encouraging people to maybe be product managers or maybe be designers. But coding touches all of those. And so it's something that kind of ties a lot of the technical careers together.
So what is the state of the market at this point? Are females in this arena, is the percentage on the rise? Have we hit a plateau or where are we?
Well, right now, at this point, we're still looking at a low percentage of women in the tech industry.
Mm-hmm.
Where right now, we're maybe at about 31% are women who are coders. and less than about 7% of them are in the business right now, are in the tech sector at this point. Okay. So the opportunity is to open up that opportunity to bring those numbers up for those women to actually get the opportunity to become coders in the tech industry.
And we want to do that at a lot of levels, right? Because you have a kind of a multifaceted problem where you might get women into tech, but then they might leave. They mm-hmm. might leave to start a family. And then, you know, to Alicia's earlier example, how do I get back in? Mm-hmm. But how do you not lose those women in the first place is a really good problem to solve. But also, how do we get more women involved at the college level? So how do we get more women interested in tech from the very beginning? So kind of solving that problem from a few different angles.
Now, there's a lot of women now, you know, for me, the reason how I got into it was because I used to code, you know, HTML. And then I was online at the Apple Store getting my second generation iPad. And, you know, I met this 16-year-old boy. And my curiosity said, like, you know, at my age, you know, no parent would ever give a 16-year-old boy $800 for an iPad. Not out their pockets. And I'm asking this young boy, I was like, well, how did you get $800? You know, there's no way. And I was like, okay, so you mow some lawns, wash some windows, wash a car, you know? And he was like, no, he had a business. He created an app. And I was like, okay, so you some genius, you know, you went to college, you know? And he was like, no, he learned it on YouTube. And I told him, my husband said, I want to do that. So me in 2012, I figured, I said, okay, I want to learn how to code. I want to learn how to do this. So I did everything I could to figure out how to code. It took me a year and a half. I created my first app, and now I am a coder. I am an iOS developer. You get women who are at that point that want to do the same thing. And so with that, that opens up that opportunity for those women to also become members of Women of Code. And I mean, that was, I didn't even know Women of Code existed until 2014. So with that, we get women who walk up in there and say, I want to learn how to code. And all I could do was we could direct them to areas to get them to that point. So you got those women who, for example, I think it was, one of them was Chelsea. Chelsea started out in Georgia. She was a teacher at Georgia Tech. Yep. And she learned UX, UI design and got an internship at one of the companies that we, you know, we were networking with. And that went from there for her finishing that internship to get a job with a major company here in Atlanta as a UX, UI design. That's the kind of stories you're going to hear that comes out of Women Who Code.
Now, is it where does the problem come? Like you mentioned that 30% of what the programmers are women. When does it happen for the woman that says, hey, I'm not going to do this? Like, are they in elementary school and then all of a sudden their math science kind of fades away or they lose interest? Because women are tremendous users of technology. But at some point in their head or somewhere, society is saying, hey, maybe this isn't for you.
So I think it's a number of issues. And I think that something that you touched on, kind of the societal pressures. Mm-hmm. I think that happens much earlier than we think. I think that happens around middle school when we're telling girls, you know, in certain ways, this is what girls do. It happened to me when I was really interested in math. I was really interested in science. People were kind of directing me towards maybe being a doctor or something else. And I'm kind of showing my age. This was in the 90s. And so, and so people, tech was not quite what it is. It hadn't quite eaten the world yet.
Right.
So people were like, you want to go into tech? Maybe you should do this other thing that women do more. And so I think there's that. But I think that there are some kind of cultural things even in tech that we can kind of solve. Tech is very much kind of a man's world right now.
And so you got to also understand where she's coming from, where it says it's a man's world. A lot of people really don't realize women are the ones that use all the apps.
Right.
Shop with them. I mean, you don't.
Well, that's what I'm saying. From a user or consumer standpoint, you're very tech savvy. You know, it isn't a situation where it's foreign to you or you're not interested. I'm just wondering where the disconnect is from being a user to being a creator. Like, where does that the road splits?
I think part of it is a branding problem. I think we tell people, not just women, that, you know, tech is for nerds and you have to be super smart to do it. And you have to really love math. You have to really love science. those things are not necessarily true depending on what you do in tech. Mm-hmm. And so we had a program that we worked on with Band of Coders where we were teaching middle school girls how to code. And when we told them we were going to teach them how to code, they were like, oh, yeah, I'm over that. But when we told them you can create new apps, we can teach you how to create something, that's when they got really motivated.
All of a sudden, they're not intimidated. They think it's doable.
And now it's cool even.
And now they can own it, right? Like now it's not something that they just consume. Now it's something that they can create and they can own.
And so on my meetup on Sunday past, we had some of the guys from another meetup group to help us with some coding with iOS. And we were talking about, okay, so the apps that's out there right now. And so the main app, I said, oh, the worst app. Oh, this app is the bad. Now, I'm sorry. I'm hoping they're listening because it will help them. But the first thing all of us said was the Chick-fil-A app is like the worst app. And we were so disappointed.
Some people
women.
Like it.
Well, because y'all got the free chicken sandwich. But we looked at it, you know, as women, we look at it differently. We looked at it as how comfortable, how feasible, or how functionable it is for us to use it. Because if I'm like, and I gave, you know, the guys a scenario. I said, okay, I'm in my van. I got 5 kids in the car. Oh, they're hungry. Everybody loves Chick-fil-A. Let's go to Chick-fil-A. I'll use the app. That way, I don't have to get out my car. So I get into the app and I'm like, wait a minute. I got to fill out all this information. Oh my God, this is just taking so long. Okay, be quiet in the back, kids. You know, and I'm giving them some scenarios. So I get everything in there. And then I put in all the orders for the kids. And then I drive up. And I say, okay, so where do I pick up the food for my kids? I have to go inside. So now I got to get all the kids out the van and go inside to pick up their food. Nobody, for us as women, nobody took the time to test the product. Women use these apps for convenience. We don't want to go inside with 5 kids.
But she touches on a really good point that perspective is a lot of the reason that we need diversity in tech.
Right, because if guys are doing it, it's not on their radar and it's,
there's just solving problems relevant to them.
To them, exactly. And they're not kind of getting in the head of the user. In this case, a woman that might have several children, it's a hassle to get out of the car. So they got to do everything in their power to make it easier for that person to be able to buy Chick-fil-A without getting out of the car.
And they're not the only ones.
Right. And that's just one example.
Yeah,
right?
That's just one example. I mean, we volunteered for the international school a couple of years ago.
Oh, Global Village. We do a program with them just about yearly.
Yeah.
And they are a school for refugee young women. Mm-hmm. So what they
It's here in town?
Yeah, in Decatur. Mm-hmm. And so what they found is that in these situations, the young girls and the women are the people that are really hurt the most by these situations. Because they typically don't speak English. They typically don't have much education. So how do you now teach this woman to, you know, make her own way in the world?
And there's probably trust issues too for that person.
Absolutely. Exactly. So they're overcoming all of these issues, and we're trying to transition them into school, maybe getting their GED, but how do you take care of yourself? And so something that we found that was really interesting there, so we talked a little bit about societal pressures. They were really excited just to see us, and they didn't kind of know that being a developer was supposedly uncool.
Right.
And so you could just see their eyes light up at all the possibilities that this could kind of open for them. Mm-hmm. And so that was a really cool experience. But you also get that perspective of this person is not from the U.S. This person has a completely different background.
Right.
So the problems that they came up with and the solutions that they came up with were something that we could not even have imagined. Like, that's a great idea.
Yeah. And especially the Instagram one where one of the young girls seen that there was no pastel colors on the list of colors for their, you know, for the pictures. And I'm like,
and that's like obvious once they say it, right?
You know, as women, we was like, I'm like, oh, let me look, you know? And so for her, you know, no guy would ever think about a pastel colors. And so this is why, I mean, for us, it's like as coders, as developers, if they put one woman in the middle of those men, the perspective would be 100% different. Just one.
Yeah. Right.
Just changing the way they think, because we ask too many questions.
But the opportunities to serve are everywhere, and I would think that the career opportunities are marvelous. I mean, think about Todd's business. I mean, tech touches everything. Tech has a pretty serious role in your business, all the way from the fintech. You guys were talking about collecting the money and processing the money and the way that you're able to get the word out about the
property. Do you guys have an app for the tenant to use to contact, if there's a problem or is there a renter warehouse?
They say about that, we're completely paperless, right? Yeah. And so it's a little bit offshoot, and we do it because of all of technology. We call it the Morningside Mom Mafia. So we have a lot of, I would say all of the people that do work for us are not the agents, but are women that who are in the workforce, who left the workforce to raise a family, professional, know what they're doing, and can do a lot of the things that we need done, prepare leases, accounting, offsite. They don't need to be in a physical office.
Right. You offer them the flexibility and it fits into their lifestyle.
Exactly. So they don't have to work.
It's on their terms.
I got a lady that does leases at 4 a.m.
And we don't care as long as they're done.
As women, we work hard.
And they do work hard.
I was at a conference and I was talking to a gentleman. He was like, oh yeah, women coders are awesome. But I have a problem. When their child gets sick, they don't come to work. And I never could get that out of my head, because it's like there's men out there that just don't understand. As a woman, we're not only, taking care of the house, but we have to take care of the husband and we got to take care of the kids. And if a man was to do it, it's not a problem. They wouldn't make a big deal. But for us, it's a big deal. So you're telling me that you don't trust us because we got to take care of our kids. And I came back and told him, I said, so you're telling me that once that child is taken care of, she don't make up for the time she lost, to perform to her top, her best? And he's like, oh yeah, they do. But I could never get out of that head, because that's the first thing he said that he had a problem with. And so we as women, I'm like, we do so much, but we want to be perfect. We want that perfection. We want to be able to work and do this, I love coding. I love it. I dream about it. I can't sleep. I go blind, and I panic and I scream and I cry, but I cannot stop coding. So I know that I'm not the only woman out there that has that, feeling for it. But the thing is that men have to understand that if you're going to bring a woman in there, to be prepared to be flexible with her.
Right.
And a lot of, and this is what the problem is with the whole tech industry, is the flexibility. They have a problem. Now they want coders and programmers to come into the office and work. They want you to come in 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. And so again, that flexibility, there's some companies that say, listen, you doing your job, I don't give a damn.
You better believe it. When you're singing to the choir here, I've been on record and on air saying I absolutely love to work with women. I think they're smarter. They're more collaborative. They're better with money. They're creative. They're more comfortable in their own skin. They're easier to work with. So you singing to the choir over here, right, baby. Believe me.
So now, what do you need more of? Do you need more women to get active in the organization, or at least open their mind to, hey, there's an organization here that has a lot to offer us if we want to improve our skills, if we want to get back in the workforce, if I'm even considering technology as a career path, do you need more of that, or do you need more companies that are saying, hey, we want to make kind of some of our opportunities available to you?
We need both, actually. We definitely want to be working with more women and kind of getting
the word out.
Exactly. And promoting them and empowering them. But to do that, we also need to partner with some great companies. And our recent hackathon was a really good example of how we brought together all of these women that are interested in coding and interested in furthering their technical career with these amazing companies. So we had a career expo in combination with the hackathon. And
how did that work?
It was interesting because, first of all, it was our first hackathon.
I guess like, Chick-fil-A wasn't the company.
They didn't
maybe next
welcome,
year.
We will welcome
Chick-fil-A. I'm telling you, we will. But,
so we had this career expo with the hackathon, which is bigger than a typical hackathon. We also had a day of workshops because what we wanted to do was kind of be a kinder, gentler hackathon.
Right, because some of them are pretty hardcore.
Intimidating,
right? Intense.
And I had seen so many women who were like, you know,
I don't want anything to do with this.
We'll never do it again.
And so, but there's such great learning opportunities. There's such great networking opportunities. Right. And we wanted to make sure that you weren't afraid to do that. So we had a day of workshops to prepare you in any of the technologies that you might use at the hackathon, let you know what a hackathon even is, you know, what's the structure and how to refine your idea. But at the same time, we had, because we don't know how to do anything small, we had a career expo where we had some of the top tech companies, top startups, MailChimp, you know, CallRail, a lot of Turner,
the big players here in town,
Mad Mobile.
Mad Mobile, just great companies. And we got to kind of pair these women who are already here to code and to be involved anyway with these awesome companies who were looking for that kind of candidate. And it was just kind of the perfect storm of everybody
and
in the room.
What were they hacking? Were they making apps?
They were making apps.
Yeah, they were making apps.
And to solve what? Challenge.
Any challenge. Anything. We had tracks. So we had things that you could kind of focus in. And so IoT, Internet of Things was one of them. Internet of Things and mobile was kind of
plus
paired.
Social.
Yeah, we had social, like social action, not social media. Yeah. So like if you want to solve a social
problem. Community challenge.
Yes, exactly.
And we also had media. So if you wanted to do anything, Atlanta's a huge media company.
Sure, with Turner, absolutely.
Exactly. So with Atlanta being such a huge media city, we definitely wanted that to be one of the focuses. And so you could kind of earn extra points if you worked on something in that area, but you could solve any problem.
And then
what
was there a winner or is there
we had several
three prizes? Yeah, three.
Well, everybody left.
So everybody's a winner.
Yeah,
everybody's a winner.
Because we had we expected 100 women. We invited 100 women. 70 showed up.
Uh-huh.
Within that 70, only a couple left. Whereas a lot of hackathon people walk
30%
out.
And then they're like, this isn't for me, right?
These women was amazing.
Right.
I was like blown. We were all blown out the water.
We only lost two people.
Yep.
Wow.
And we didn't lose any teams. And we had 9 teams and we had a lot of prizes. So that's why everybody got prizes. If we had 10 or 15 teams, then maybe. But we had three main winners and they will all get some mentoring from Women Who Code advisors.
Great.
And they'll also be working with ATDC. They have memberships there. And we're making sure that we're connecting them with the community and making sure that they can work together if they choose to take that idea further.
But if, like in the future, if say Todd's company, Renters Warehouse, said we want an app, they can participate in this? They can become a sponsor or have
well,
their company?
Well, we have women, for example, we got women There's women are getting together now and starting to create like a business to be able to create apps.
Right.
So, for example, I got several women together. They have projects they want to do. And so we're trying to get them together. So we'll if somebody said we would like a project, we would like women to do it. A bunch of us will get together and we will work on that app. Mm-hmm. So we're working on I'm working on a group of women who basically want to work on iOS mobile apps. Mm-hmm. And so that ability is not going to be a problem because there's plenty of women in our organization who would take, because a lot of women don't want to work for a company. They want to be entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And so saying that, hey, listen, if he was to reach out to us, say, hey, listen, you think you got a couple of women who would be willing to build our apps for us and I'll pay for them? I will tell you right now, there will be no hesitation.
You'd be able
we,
to find
we will
them.
Get, Eric, tell them, there will be no hesitation. There would be women say, yes, I'll do it.
Right.
And that's something that was really interesting about the hackathon, too. It kind of triggered this spirit of entrepreneurship, mm-hmm. which is something we definitely want to further. People kind of getting together like, well, if I can do this in 3 days,
right. Imagine what I can do.
You know, with some real time,
yeah,
some
day,
real
right.
funding, you know, that kind of thing. So it's really interesting the kinds of opportunities that the hackathon especially brought.
When's your next event?
Well, we have several events a month.
Okay.
Right.
So,
I'm looking at the calendar. I mean, there's events every week, right?
Oh, wow.
Right. Pretty much.
So probably our next event is All the Nerdy Ladies, which is the first Monday. and we do that at Joystick. And it's just a really fun kind of networking experience. And we also have our general meeting, which is the third Tuesday. Mm-hmm. We have our iOS developers group, which
we move on Sunday now.
Oh, is on Sunday.
It's on
Thank
Sundays
you for correcting
now.
Me.
Yes.
And we have CodeJam, which is really just an informal way to kind of share your ideas, get some questions answered, maybe demo something really cool that you've been working on. And that takes place at TechSquare Labs on the third Sunday as well, the same time as the iOS developers group.
And if somebody wanted to learn more, the website for you guys again?
It's womenwhocode.com/ATL.
All right. Well, thank you so much, ladies, for sharing this with us. I think our listeners are going to get a great deal of value out of hearing what you have to say. And I think you can probably expect to see some of them showing up at your upcoming event.
Awesome. Oh, yeah, we'd love to have them.
Yes.
All right. Until next time, this is Stone Payton for Lee Cantor, our producer, Ryan Redhawk McPherson. Our guests this afternoon, Todd Barton, Alicia Carr, and Eric, I don't remember your last
Stanley.
Name. Stanley. And everyone here at the Business Radio X family saying we'll see you in the fast lane.